anchor, oars, and a few rusty chains. A broken rowboat sat near the door. The sky was beginning its lazy fade to black as we walked to the entrance. I wondered whether I should reach for Savannah's hand, but in the end I did nothing. While I may have had some version of hormone-induced success with women, I had very little experience when it came to girls I cared about. Despite the fact that only a day had passed since we'd met, I already knew I was in new territory. We stepped onto the sagging porch, and Savannah pointed to the rowboat.
"Maybe that's why he opened a restaurant, because his boat sank."
"Could be. Or maybe someone just left it there and he never bothered to remove it. You ready?"
"As I'll ever be," she said,
and I pushed open the door. I don't know what she expected, but she wore a satisfied expression as she stepped inside. There was a long bar off on one side, windows that overlooked the river, and in the main seating area, wooden picnic benches. A couple of waitresses with big hair, they hadn't seemed to change any more than the decor, were moving among the tables, carrying platters of food. The air held the greasy smell of fried food and cigarette smoke, but somehow it seemed just right. Most of the tables were filled, but I motioned toward one near the jukebox. It was playing a country western song, though I couldn't have told you who the singer was. I'm more of a classic rock fan. We wove our way among the tables. Most of the customers looked as if they worked hard for a living. Construction workers, landscapers, truckers, and the like. I hadn't seen so many NASCAR baseball hats since, well, I'd never seen that many. A few guys in my squad were fans, but I never got the appeal of watching a bunch of guys drive in circles all day, or why they didn't post the articles in the automotive section of the paper instead of the sports section. We sat across from each other, and I watched Savannah take in the room.
"I like places like this," she said. "Was this your regular hangout when you lived here?"
"No, this was more of a special occasion place. Usually I hung out at a place called Leroy's. It's a bar near Wrightsville Beach."
She reached for a laminated menu sandwiched between a metal napkin holder and bottles of ketchup and Texas Pete hot sauce. "This is way better," she said. She opened the menu. "Now, what's this place famous for?"
"Shrimp," I said.
"Gee, really?" she asked.
"Seriously, every kind of shrimp you can imagine. You know that scene in Forrest Gump when Bubba was telling Forrest all the ways to prepare shrimp? Grilled, sautéed, barbecued, Cajun shrimp, lemon shrimp, shrimp creole, shrimp cocktail. That's this place."
"What do you like?"
"I like them chilled with cocktail sauce on the side, or fried."
She closed the menu. "You pick," she said, sliding her menu toward me. "I trust you."
I slipped the menu back into its place against the napkin holder.
"So?"
"Chilled, in a bucket. It's the consummate experience."
She leaned across the table. "So how many women have you brought here? For the consummate experience, I mean."
"Including you? Let me think."
I drummed my fingers on the table.
"One."
"I'm honored."
"This was more of a place for me and my friends when we wanted to eat instead of drink. There was no better food after a day spent surfing."
"As I'll soon find out."
The waitress showed up and I ordered the shrimp. When she asked what we wanted to drink, I lifted my hands.
"Sweet tea, please,"
Savannah said. "Make it two," I added. After the waitress left, we settled into easy conversation, uninterrupted even when our drinks arrived. We talked about life in the army again. For whatever reason, Savannah seemed fascinated by it. She also asked about growing up here. I told her more than I thought I would about my high school years, and probably too much about the 3 years before enlistment.
She listened intently, asking questions now and then, and I realized it had been a long time since I'd been on a date like this. A few years. Maybe more. Not since Lucy, anyway. I hadn't seen any reason for it. But as I sat across from Savannah, I had to rethink my decision. I liked being alone with her. And I wanted to see more of her. Not just tonight, but tomorrow. and the next day. Everything, from the easy way she laughed to her wit to her obvious concern for others, struck me as fresh and desirable. Then again, spending time with her also made me realize how lonely I'd been. I hadn't admitted that to myself, but after just 2 days with Savannah, I knew it was true. "Let's get some more music going," she said, interrupting my thoughts. I rose from my seat, rummaged through my pockets for a couple of quarters, and dropped them in. Savannah put both hands on the glass and leaned forward as she read the titles, then picked a few songs. By the time we got back to the table, the first was already going, although I had no idea who was singing. "You know, I just realized that I've done all the talking tonight," I said.
"You are a chatty thing," she observed.
I freed my utensils from the rolled-up paper napkin. "About you. You know all about me, but I don't know anything about you."
"Sure you do," she said. "You know how old I am, where I go to school, my major, and the fact that I don't drink. You know I'm from Lenore, live on a ranch, love horses, and spend my summers building homes for Habitat for Humanity. You know a lot."
Yeah, I suddenly realized. I did, including things she hadn't mentioned. "It's not enough," I said. "Your turn." She leaned forward.
"Ask what you will."
"Tell me about your parents," I said.
"All right," she said, reaching for a napkin.
She wiped the condensation from her glass.
"My mom and dad have been married for 25 years, and they're still as happy as clams and madly in love. They met in college at Appalachian State, and Mom worked at a bank for a couple of years until she had me. Since then, she's been a stay-at-home mom, and she was the kind of mom who was always there for everyone else, too. Classroom helper, volunteer driver, coach of our soccer team, head of the PTA, all that kind of stuff. Now that I'm gone, she spends every day volunteering for other things. The library, schools, the church, whatever. Dad is a history teacher at the school, and he's coached the girls' volleyball team since I was little. Last year they made it to the state finals, but they lost. He's also a deacon in our church, and he runs the youth group and the choir. Do you want to see a picture?"
"Sure," I said. She opened her purse and removed her wallet. She flipped it open and pushed it across the table, our fingers brushing.
"They're a little ragged at the edges from being in the ocean," she said. "But you get the idea."
I turned the photo around. Savannah took more after her father than her mother, or had at least inherited the darker features from him. "Nice-looking couple."
"I love 'em," she said, taking the wallet back. "They're the best."
"Why do you live on a ranch if your dad's a teacher?"
"Oh, it's not a working ranch. It used to be when my grandfather owned it. But he had to sell bits and pieces to pay the taxes on it. By the time my dad inherited it, it was down to 10 acres with a house, stables, and a corral. It's more like a great big yard than a ranch. It's the way we always referred to it, but I guess that conjures up the wrong image, huh?"
"I know you said you did gymnastics, but did you play volleyball for your dad?"
"No," she said. "I mean, he's a great coach, but he always encouraged me to do what was right for me. And volleyball wasn't it. I tried, and I was okay, but it wasn't what I loved."
"You loved horses?"
"Since I was a little girl. My mom gave me this statue of a horse when I was really little, and that's what started the whole thing. I got my first horse for Christmas when I was 8, and it's still the best Christmas gift I've ever received. Slocum, she was this really gentle old mare, and she was perfect for me. The deal was I had to take care of her, feed her and brush her and keep her stall clean. Between her, school, gymnastics, and taking care of the rest of the animals, that's pretty much all I had time for."
"The rest of the animals?"
"When I was growing up, our house was kind of like a farm. Dogs, cats, even a llama for a while. I was a sucker when it came to strays. My parents got to the point where they wouldn't even argue with me about it. They were usually 4 or 5 at any one time. Sometimes an owner would come, hoping to find a lost pet, and he'd leave with one of our recent additions if he couldn't find it. We were like the pound."
"Your parents were patient."
"Yes," she said. "They were. But they were suckers for strays, too. Even though she'd deny it, my mom was worse than me.
I studied her.
I'll bet you were a good student.
Straight A's. I was valedictorian in my class.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
I don't know, she said. Why?
I didn't answer. Did you ever have a serious boyfriend?
Oh, now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty, huh?
I was just asking.
What do you think?
I think, I said, dragging out the words, I have no idea.
She laughed.
Then, let's let that question go for now. A little mystery is good for the soul. Besides, I'd be willing to bet you can figure it out on your own.
The waitress arrived with a bucket of shrimp and a couple of plastic containers of cocktail sauce, set them on the table, and refilled our tea with the efficiency of someone who'd been doing it for way too long. She turned on her heel without asking whether we needed anything else.
This place is legendary for its hospitality.
She's just busy, Savannah said, reaching for a shrimp. And besides, I think she knows you're grilling me and wanted to leave me to my inquisitor.
She cracked the shrimp and peeled it, then dipped it in the sauce before taking a bite. I reached in the pail and set a couple on my plate.
What else do you want to know?
I don't know anything. What's the best thing about being in college?
She thought about it as she filled her plate.
Good teachers, she finally said. In college, you can sometimes pick your professors as long as you're flexible with your schedule. That's what I like. Before I started, that was the advice my dad gave me. He said to pick classes based on the teacher whenever you can, not the subject. I mean, he knew that you had to take certain subjects to get a degree, but his point was that good teachers are priceless. They inspire you, they entertain you, and you end up learning a ton even when you don't know it.
Because they're passionate about their subjects, I said.
She winked.
Exactly. And he was right. I've taken classes in subjects I never thought I'd be interested in, and as far away from my major as you can imagine. But you know what? I still remember those classes as if I were still taking them.
I'm impressed. I thought you'd say something like going to the basketball games was the best part about being in college. It's like a religion at Chapel Hill.
I enjoy those, too. Just like I enjoy the friends I'm making and living away from Mom and Dad and all that. I've learned a lot since I left Lenore. I mean, I had a wonderful life there, and my parents are great, but I was sheltered. I've had a few eye-opening experiences.
Like what?
Lots of things. Like feeling the pressure to drink or hook up with a guy every time I went out. My first year, I hated UNC. I didn't feel like I fit in, and I didn't. I begged my parents to let me come home or transfer, but they wouldn't agree. I think they knew that in the long run, I'd regret it. And they were probably right. It wasn't until sometime during my sophomore year that I met some girls who felt the same way I did about those type of things, and it's been a lot better ever since. I joined a couple of Christian student groups. I spend Saturday morning at a shelter in Raleigh serving the poor. And I feel no pressure at all to go to this or that party or date this or that guy. And if I do go to a party, the pressure doesn't get to me. I just accept the fact that I don't have to do what everyone else does. I can do what's right for me.
Which explained why she was with me last night, I thought. And right now, for that matter.
She brightened.
It's kind of like you, I guess. In the past couple of years, I've grown up. So, in addition to both of us being expert surfers, we have that in common, too.
I laughed. Yeah, except that I struggled a lot more than you did.
She leaned forward again.
My dad always said that when you're struggling with something, look at all the people around you and realize that every single person you see is struggling with something. And to them, it's just as hard as what you're going through.
Your dad sounds like a smart man.
Mom and Dad both. I think they both graduated in the top five in college. That's how they met, studying in the library. Education was really important to both of them, and they sort of made me their project. I mean, I was reading before I got to kindergarten, but they never made it seem like a chore. And they've talked to me like I was an adult for as long as I can remember.
For a moment, I wondered how different my life would have been had they been my parents. but I shook the thought away. I knew my father had done the best he could, and I had no regrets about the way I turned out. Regrets about the journey, maybe, but not the destination. Because however it had happened, I'd somehow ended up eating shrimp in a dingy downtown shack with a girl that I already knew I'd never forget. After dinner, we headed back to the house, which was surprisingly quiet. The music was still playing, but most people were relaxing around the fire, as if anticipating an early morning. Tim sat among them, engrossed in earnest conversation. Surprising me, Savannah reached for my hand, halting me in my tracks before we reached the group.
"Let's go for a walk," she said. "I want to let dinner settle just a little before I sit down."
Above us, a few wispy clouds were spread among the stars, and the moon, still full, hovered just over the horizon. A light breeze fanned my cheek, and I could hear the ceaseless motion of the waves as they rolled up the shore. The tide had gone out, and we moved to the harder, more compact sand near the water's edge. Savannah put a hand on my shoulder for balance as she removed one sandal, then another. When she finished, I did the same, and we walked in silence for a few steps.
"It's so beautiful out here. I mean, I love the mountains, but this is wonderful in its own way. It's peaceful."
I felt the same words could be used to describe her, and I wasn't sure what to say.
"I can't believe that I only met you yesterday," she added. "It seems like I've known you much longer."
Her hand felt warm and comfortable in mine. "I was thinking the same thing." She gave a dreamy smile, studying the stars.
"I wonder what Tim thinks about this," she murmured. She glanced at me. "He thinks I'm a little naive."
"Are you?"
"Sometimes," she admitted, and I laughed. She went on. "I mean, when I see two people heading off on a walk like this, I'm thinking, oh, that's sweet. I'm not thinking they're going to hook up behind the dunes. But the fact is, sometimes they do. I just never realize it beforehand, and I'm always surprised when I hear about it later. I can't help it. Like last night after you left, I heard about two people here who did just that, and I couldn't believe it."
"I would have been more surprised if it hadn't happened."
"That's what I don't like about college, by the way. It's like a lot of people don't believe these years really count, and so you're allowed to experiment with whatever. There's such a casual view about things like sex and drinking and even drugs. I know that sounds really old-fashioned, but I just don't get it. Maybe that's why I didn't want to go sit by the fire like everyone else. To be honest, I'm kind of disappointed in those two people I heard about, and I don't want to sit there trying to pretend that I'm not. I know I shouldn't judge, and I'm sure they're good people since they're here to help, but still, what was the point? Shouldn't you save things like that for someone you love? So that it really means something?"
I knew she didn't want answers, nor did I offer any. "Who told you about that couple?" I asked instead.
"Tim. I think he was disappointed, too. But what's he going to do, kick them out?"
We had gone a good way down the beach, and we turned around. In the distance, I could see the circle of figures silhouetted by the fire. The mist smelled of salt, and ghost crabs scattered to their holes as we approached.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I was out of line there."
"About what?"
"For being so upset about it. I shouldn't pass judgment. It's not my place."
"Everyone judges," I said. "It's human nature."
"I know, but I'm not perfect either. In the end, it's only God's judgment that matters, and I've learned enough to know that no one can presume to know the will of God."
I smiled.
"What?" she asked.
"The way you talk reminds me of our chaplain. He says the same thing."
We strolled down the beach, and as we neared the house, we moved away from the water's edge onto the softer sand. Our feet slipped with every step, and I could feel Savannah tighten her grip on my hand. I wondered whether she would let go when we got close to the fire, and I was disappointed when she did.
"Hey,"
Tim called out, his voice friendly.
"You're back."
Randy was there, too, and he wore his usual sulky expression. Frankly, I was getting a bit tired of his resentment. Brad stood behind Susan, who was leaning into his chest. Susan seemed undecided about whether to pretend to be happy so she could learn the details from Savannah, or to be upset for Randy's benefit. The others, obviously indifferent, went back to their conversations. Tim stood and made his way toward us.
"Well, how was dinner?"
"It was great," Savannah said. "I got a taste of local culture. We went to the shrimp shack."
"Sounds like fun,"
he commented. I strained to detect any undercurrent of jealousy, but found none. Tim motioned over his shoulder and went on.
"Do you want to join us? We're just winding down, getting ready for tomorrow."
"Actually, I'm a bit sleepy. I was just going to walk John to his car, and after that I'll turn in. What time do we need to be up?"
6. "We'll have breakfast and be at the site tomorrow by 7:30. Don't forget your sunscreen. We'll be out in the sun all day."
"I'll remember. You should remind everyone else."
"I have,"
he said.
"And I'll do it again tomorrow, but you just wait. Some folks won't listen and they'll get fried."
"I'll see you in the morning," she said.
"All right."
He turned his attention to me.
"I'm glad you came by today."
"Me too," I said.
"And listen, if you find yourself bored in the next couple of weeks, we could always use an extra hand."
I laughed. I knew it was coming.
"I am who I am," he said, holding out his hand. "But either way, I hope to see you again."
We shook hands. Tim went back to his seat, and Savannah nodded toward the house. We made our way toward the dune, stopped to put our sandals back on, then wound our way along the wooden pathway, through the seagrass and around the house. A minute later, we were at the car. In the darkness, I couldn't make out her expression.
"I had a good time tonight," she said. "And today."
I swallowed.
"When can I see you again?"
It was a simple question, expected even, but I was surprised to hear the desire in my tone. I hadn't even kissed her yet.
"I suppose," she said, "that depends on you. You know where I am."
"How about tomorrow night?"
I blurted out.
"I know of another place that has a band, and it's lots of fun."
She tucked a strand of hair behind her ear.
"How about the night after? Would that be okay? It's just that the first day at the site is always exciting and tiring at the same time. We have a big group dinner, and I really shouldn't miss it."
"Yeah, that's fine," I said, thinking it wasn't fine at all. She must have heard something in my voice.
"Like Tim said, you're welcome to come by if you'd like."
"No, that's okay. Tuesday night's fine."
We continued to stand there, one of those awkward moments I'll probably never get used to, but she turned away before I could attempt a kiss. Normally, I would have plunged ahead just to see what happened. I may not have been open about my feelings, but I was impulsive and quick to action. With Savannah, I felt oddly paralyzed. She didn't appear to be in any hurry either. A car passed, breaking the spell. She took a step toward the house, then stopped and put her hand on my arm. In an innocent gesture, she kissed me on the cheek. It was almost sisterly, but her lips were soft, and the scent of her engulfed me, lingering even after she pulled back.
"I really did have a good time," she murmured. "I don't think I'll forget about today for a long, long time."
I felt her hand leave my arm, and then, in a whisper, she vanished, retreating up the stairs of the house. At home later that night, I found myself tossing and turning in bed, reliving the events of the day. Finally, I sat up, wishing I had told her how much our day had meant to me. Outside my window, I saw a shooting star cross the sky in a brilliant streak of white. I wanted to believe it was an omen, though of what, I wasn't sure. Instead, all I could do was replay Savannah's gentle kiss on my cheek for the 100th time and wonder how I could be falling for a girl that I'd met only the day before.
Five.
Morning, Dad, I said, staggering into the kitchen. I squinted in the bright morning light and saw my dad standing in front of the stove. The smell of bacon filled the air.
Oh, hi, John.
I plopped myself on the chair, still trying to wake up.
Yeah, I know, I'm up early, but I wanted to catch you before you headed off to work.
Oh, he said.
Okay, let me just get a bit more food going.
He seemed almost excited despite this wrinkle in the routine. It was times like these that he let me know he was glad I was home.
Is there any coffee? I asked.
It's in the pot, he said.
I poured myself a cup and wandered to the table. The newspaper lay as it had arrived. My dad always read it over breakfast, and I knew enough not to touch it. He had always been funny about being the first to read it, and he always read it in exactly the same order. I expected my dad to ask how the evening had gone with Savannah, but instead, he said nothing, preferring to concentrate on his cooking. Noting the clock, I knew Savannah would be leaving for the site in a few minutes, and I wondered whether she was thinking about me as much as I was thinking about her. In the rush of what was no doubt a chaotic morning for her, I doubted she was. The realization made me ache unexpectedly.
What did you do last night? I finally asked, trying to get my mind off Savannah.
He kept on cooking as if he hadn't heard me.
Dad?
I said.
Yeah?
He asked.
How'd it go last night?
How'd what go?
Your night, anything exciting happen?
No, he said. Nothing.
He smiled at me before turning a couple of slices in the pan. I could hear the sizzling intensify.
I had a great time, I volunteered.
Savannah's really something. We actually went to church together yesterday. Somehow I thought he'd ask more about it, and I'll admit that I wanted him to. I imagined that we might have a real conversation, the kind that other fathers might have with their sons, that he might laugh and maybe crack a joke or two. Instead, he turned on another burner. He sprayed a small frying pan with oil and poured in the egg batter.
Would you mind putting some bread in the toaster?
He asked. I sighed.
No,
I said, already knowing that we'd eat in silence.
No problem at all.
I spent the rest of the day surfing, or rather, trying to surf. The ocean had calmed overnight, and the small swells were nothing to get excited about. Making matters worse, they broke nearer to shore than they had the day before, so even if I did find a few worth riding, the experience didn't last long before the waves petered out. In the past, I might have gone to Oak Island or even driven up to Atlantic Beach, where I could catch a ride out to Shackelford Banks in the hope that I'd find something better. Today, I just wasn't in the mood. Instead, I surfed where I had the previous 2 days. The house was a little way down the beach, and it looked almost uninhabited. The back door was closed, the towels were gone, and no one passed by the window or stepped out on the deck. I wondered when everyone would be getting back, probably around 4 or 5 o'clock, and I had already made the decision that I'd be long gone by then. There was no reason to be here in the first place, and the last thing I wanted Savannah to think was that I was some kind of stalker. I left around 3 and swung by Leroy's. The bar was darker and dingier than I remembered, and I hated the place as soon as I walked in the door. I had always thought of it as a pro bar, as in professional alcoholics bar, and I saw the proof as lonely men sat hovering over glasses of Tennessee's finest, hoping for refuge from life's problems. Leroy was there, and he recognized me when I walked in. When I took a seat at the bar, he automatically brought a glass to the beer tap and began filling it.
"Long time no see," he commented. "You keeping out of trouble?"
"Trying," I grunted. I glanced around the bar as he slid the glass in front of me.
"I like what you done with the place," I said, motioning over my shoulder. "Good. It's all for you. You gonna eat anything?"
"No, this is fine. Thanks." He wiped the counter in front of me, then flipped a rag over his shoulder and moved away to take someone else's order. A moment later, I felt a hand on my shoulder.
"Johnny, what are you doing here?"
I turned and saw one of the many friends I had come to despise. That's the way it was here. I hated everything about the place, including my friends. And I realized that I always had. I had no idea why I'd come or even why I'd ever made this a regular hangout, other than the fact that it was here, and I had no place else to go.
"Hey, Toby," I said.
Tall and scrawny, Toby took a seat beside me, and when he turned to face me, I saw that his eyes were already glassy. He smelled as if he hadn't showered in days, and his shirt was stained.
"Are you still playing Rambo?"
he asked, his words slurred.
"You look like you've been working out."
"Yeah," I said, not wanting to go into it.
"What are you doing these days?" "Hanging out, mainly. For the last couple weeks, anyway, I was working at Quick Stop until a couple weeks ago, but the owner was a real ass."
"Still living at home?"
"Of course,"
he said, sounding almost proud of the fact. He tipped a bottle and took a long drink, then focused on my arms.
"You look good. You been working out?"
he asked again.
"A little," I said, knowing he didn't remember he'd already asked. "You're big."
I couldn't think of anything to say. Toby took another drink.
"Hey, there's a party tonight at Mandy's," he said. "You remember Mandy, right?"
Yeah, I remembered. A girl from my past who lasted less than a weekend. Toby was still going on.
"Her parents are up in New York or someplace like that, and it should be a real banger. We're just having a little pre-party to get us in the proper mood. Do you want to join us?"
He motioned over his shoulder toward four guys at a corner table littered with three empty pitchers. I recognized two from my past life, but the others were strangers.
"I can't," I said. "I'm supposed to be meeting my dad for dinner. Thanks, though." "Blow him off. It's going to be a blast. Kim will be there."
Another woman from my past. Another reminder that made me wince inside. I could barely stomach the person I used to be.
"I can't," I said, shaking my head.
I stood, leaving the mostly full glass in front of me. "I promised, and he's let me stay with him, you know how it is." That made sense to him, and he nodded.
"Then let's get together this weekend. A bunch of us are heading up to Ocracoke to go surfing."
"Maybe," I said, knowing there wasn't a chance.
"Your dad still have the same number?"
"Yeah," I said. I left, sure that he'd never call and that I'd never return to Leroy's. On my way home, I picked up steaks for dinner, along with a bag of salad, some dressing, and a couple of potatoes. Without a car, it wasn't easy carrying the bag along with my surfboard all the way back home, but I didn't really mind the walk. I'd done it for years, and my shoes were a whole lot more comfortable than the boots I'd grown used to. Once home, I dragged the grill from the garage along with a bag of briquettes and lighter fluid. The grill was dusty, as if it hadn't been used for years.
I set it up on the back porch and emptied out the charcoal dust before hosing off the cobwebs and letting it dry in the sun. Inside, I added some salt, pepper, and garlic powder to the steaks, wrapped the potatoes in foil, and put them in the oven, then poured the salad in a bowl. Once the grill was dry, I got the briquettes going and set the table out back. Dad walked in just as I was adding the steaks to the grill. "Hey, Dad," I said over my shoulder. "I thought I'd make us dinner tonight."
"Oh,"
he said. It seemed to take him an instant to grasp the fact that he wouldn't be cooking for me.
"Okay,"
he finally added.
"How do you like your steak?"
"Medium," he said. He continued to stand near the sliding glass door.
"It looks like you haven't used the grill since I left," I said. "But you should. There's nothing better than a grilled steak. My mouth was watering all the way home."
"I'm going to go change my clothes."
"Steaks will be done in about 10 minutes.
When he left, I went back into the kitchen, took out the potatoes and the bowl of salad, along with dressing, butter, and steak sauce, and put them on the table. I heard the patio door slide open, and my dad emerged carrying 2 glasses of milk, looking like a cruise ship tourist. He was dressed in shorts, black socks, tennis shoes, and a flowered Hawaiian shirt. His legs were painfully white, as if he hadn't worn shorts in years, if ever. Thinking back, I'm not sure I'd ever seen him in shorts. I did my best to pretend he looked normal.
"Just in time," I said, returning to the grill.
I loaded both plates with steaks and set one in front of him.
"Thanks," he said. "My pleasure."
He added salad to his plate and poured the dressing, then unwrapped his potato. He added butter, then poured steak sauce onto the plate, making a small puddle. Normal and expected, except for the fact that he did all this in silence.
"How was your day?"
I asked, as always.
"The same,"
he answered, as always. He smiled again, but added nothing else. My dad, the social misfit. I wondered again why he found conversation so difficult and tried to imagine what he'd been like in his youth. How had he ever found someone to marry? I knew the last question sounded petty, but it hadn't come from spite. I was genuinely curious. We ate for a while, the clatter of forks the only sound to keep us company.
"Savannah said she'd like to meet you,"
I finally said, trying again. He cut at his steak.
"Your lady friend?"
Only my dad would phrase it that way.
"Yeah," I said. "I think you'll like her."
He nodded.
"She's a student at UNC,
I explained. He knew it was his turn, and I could sense his relief when another question came to him.
"How did you meet her?"
I told him about the bag, painting the picture, trying to make the story as humorous as possible, but laughter eluded him.
"That was kind of you," he observed.
Another conversation stopper. I cut another piece of steak.
"Dad, do you mind if I ask you a question?"
"Of course not."
"How did you and Mom meet?"
It was the first time I'd asked about her in years. Because she'd never been part of my life, because I had no memories, I'd seldom felt the need to do so. Even now, I didn't really care. I just wanted him to talk to me. He took his time, adding more butter to his potato, and I knew he didn't want to answer.
"We met at a diner," he said finally. "She was a waitress."
I waited. Nothing more seemed forthcoming.
"Was she pretty?"
"Yes," he said.
"What was she like?"
He mashed the potato and added salt, sprinkling it with care.
"She was like you," he concluded.
"What do you mean?"
He hesitated.
"She could be stubborn."
I wasn't sure what to think or even what he meant. Before I could dwell on it, he rose from the table and seized his glass.
"Would you like some more milk?"
he asked.
and I knew he would say no more about her.
6. Time is relative. I know I'm not the first to realize it, and far from the most famous, and my realization had nothing to do with energy or mass or the speed of light or anything else Einstein might have postulated. Rather, it had to do with the drag of hours while I waited for Savannah. After my dad and I finished dinner, I thought about her. I thought of her again soon after I woke. I spent the day surfing, and though the waves were better than they'd been the day before, I couldn't really concentrate and decided to call it quits by mid-afternoon. I debated whether or not to grab a cheeseburger at a little place by the beach, the best burgers in town, by the way. But even though I was in the mood, I just went home, hoping that I could talk Savannah into a burger later. I read a bit of the latest Stephen King novel, showered and threw on a pair of jeans and a polo, then read for another couple of hours before glancing at the clock and realizing only 20 minutes had passed. That's what I meant by time being relative. When my dad got home, he saw the way I was dressed and offered his keys.
"Are you going to see Savannah?" he asked.
"Yeah," I said, rising from the couch. I took the keys. "I might be late getting in." He scratched the back of his head.
"Okay,"
he said. "Breakfast tomorrow?"
"Okay."
For a reason I couldn't understand, he sounded almost nervous. "All right," I said. "I'll see you later, okay?"
"I'll probably be sleeping."
I didn't mean it literally.
"Oh,"
he said.
"Okay."
I headed for the door.
Just as I opened it, I heard him sigh. "I'd like to meet Savannah, too,"
he said in a voice so soft, I barely heard it.
The sky was still bright and the sun was bending light across the water when I arrived at the house. As I got out, I realized I was nervous. I couldn't remember the last time any girl had made me nervous, but I couldn't shake the thought that somehow things might have changed between us. I didn't know how or why I felt that way. All I knew was that I wasn't sure what I'd do if my fears proved correct. I didn't bother knocking and simply wandered in. The living room was empty, but I could hear voices down the hall, and there was the usual collection of people on the back deck. I stepped out, asking for Savannah, and was told she was at the beach. I trotted down to the sand and froze when I saw her seated near the dune next to Randy, Brad, and Susan. She hadn't noticed me, and I heard her laugh at something Randy said. She and Randy looked as much a couple as Susan and Brad. I knew they weren't, that they were probably just talking about the house they were building or sharing experiences from the last couple of days, but I didn't like it. Nor did I like the fact that Savannah was sitting as close to Randy as she'd been to me. As I stood there, I wondered whether she even remembered our date. But she smiled when she saw me, as if nothing were amiss. "There you are," she said. "I was wondering when you'd show up." Randy grinned. Despite her comment, he wore an almost victorious expression. "When the cat's away, the mice are at play," he seemed to be saying. Savannah stood and ambled toward me. She was wearing a white sleeveless blouse and a light flowing skirt that swayed when she walked. I could see the additional color on her shoulders that spoke of hours in the sun. When she got close, she stood on her tiptoes and planted a kiss on my cheek.
"Hi,"
she said, circling an arm around my waist.
"Hi."
She leaned back slightly as if evaluating my expression.
"You look like you missed me,"
she said, her voice teasing. As usual, I couldn't think of a response, and she winked at my inability to admit that I had.
"Maybe I missed you, too,"
she added.
I touched her bare shoulder.
"You ready to go?"
"As I'll ever be,"
she said. We started toward the car, and I reached for her hand, her touch making me feel all was right with the world. Well, Almost. I straightened.
I saw you talking to Randy,
I said, trying to keep my voice neutral. She squeezed my hand.
You did, huh?
I tried again.
I take it you two got to know each other while you were working.
We sure did. I was right, too. He's a nice young man. After he finishes here, he's heading up to New York for a 6-week internship at Morgan Stanley.
Huh, I grunted. She laughed under her breath.
Don't tell me you're jealous.
I'm not.
Good, she concluded, squeezing my hand again. Because there's no reason to be.
I hung on those last few words. She needn't have said them, but I couldn't be happier that she had. When we reached the car, I opened her door.
I was thinking of taking you out to Oysters, I said. It's a nightclub a little way down the beach. They'll have a band later, and we could go dancing.
What are we doing until then?
Are you hungry?
I asked, thinking about the cheeseburger I'd passed on earlier.
A little, she said. I had a snack when I got back, so I'm not too hungry yet.
How about a walk on the beach?
Maybe later.
It was obvious that she already had something in mind.
Why don't you tell me what you want to do?
She brightened.
How about if we go say hi to your father?
I wasn't sure I'd heard her right.
Really?
Yeah, really,
she said.
Just for a little while. Then we can get something to eat and go out dancing.
When I hesitated, she put a hand on my shoulder.
Please?
I wasn't all that happy about going, but the way she asked made it impossible for me to say no. I was getting used to that, I suppose, but I would rather have had her all to myself for the rest of the evening. Nor did I understand why she wanted to see my dad tonight, unless it meant she wasn't quite as thrilled as I was at the prospect of being alone. To be honest, the thought depressed me. Still, she was in a good mood as she talked about the work they'd accomplished over the last couple days. Tomorrow, they planned to start on the windows. Randy, it turned out, had worked alongside her on both days, which explained their newfound friendship. That's how she described it. I doubted Randy would have described his interest in the same way. We pulled into the drive a few minutes later, and I noted the light in my father's den. When I turned off the engine, I fiddled with the keys before getting out.
I told you my father is quiet, didn't I?
Yeah,
she said.
It doesn't matter, though. I just want to meet him.
Why?
I asked. I know how it sounded, but I couldn't help it.
Because, she said, he's your only family, and he was the one who raised you.
Once my dad got over the shock of my return with Savannah in tow and the introductions were made, he ran a quick hand over his wispy hair and stared at the floor.
I'm sorry we didn't call first, but don't blame John, she said. It was all my fault.
Oh, he said. It's okay.
Did we catch you at a bad time?
No, he glanced up, then back to the floor again.
It's a pleasure to meet you, he said.
For a moment, we all stood in the living room, none of us saying anything. Savannah wore an easy smile, but I wondered if my dad even realized it.
Would you like something to drink?
He asked, as if suddenly remembering he was supposed to play host.
I'm fine, thanks, she said. John tells me that you're quite the coin collector.
He turned to me, as if wondering whether he should answer.
I try,
he finally said.
Is that what we so rudely interrupted?
She asked, using the same teasing tone she used with me. To my surprise, I heard my dad give a nervous laugh. Not loud, but a laugh nonetheless. Amazing.
No, you didn't interrupt. I was just examining a new coin I got today.
As he spoke, I could sense him trying to gauge how I'd react. Savannah either didn't notice or pretended not to.
Really?
She asked.
What kind?
My dad shifted his weight from one foot to the other. Then, to my astonishment, he looked up and asked her, "Would you like to see it?" We spent 40 minutes in the den. For the most part, I sat in the den and listened to my dad tell stories I knew by heart. Like most serious collectors, he kept only a few coins at home, and I didn't have any idea where the rest of them were stored. He would rotate part of the collection every couple of weeks, new coins appearing as if by magic. Usually there were never more than a dozen in his office at any one time, and never anything valuable. But I got the impression that he could have been showing Savannah a common Lincoln penny, and she would have been entranced. She asked dozens of questions, questions either I or any book on coin collecting could have answered. But as the minutes passed, her questions became more subtle. Instead of asking why a coin might be particularly valuable, she asked when and where he'd found it, and she was treated to tales of boring weekends of my youth spent in places like Atlanta and Charleston and Raleigh and Charlotte. My dad talked a lot about those trips. Well, for him, anyway. He still had a tendency to retreat into himself for long stretches, but he probably said more in those 40 minutes to her than he'd said to me since I'd arrived home. From my vantage point, I saw the passion she had referred to, but it was a passion I'd seen 1,000 times before, and it didn't alter my opinion that he used coins as a way to avoid life instead of embracing it. I'd stopped talking to him about coins because I wanted to talk about something else. My father stopped talking because he knew how I felt and could discuss nothing else. And yet, my dad was happy, and I knew it. I could see the way his eyes gleamed as he gestured to a coin, pointing out the mint mark or how crisp the stamp had been or how the value of a coin might differ because it had arrows or wreaths. He showed Savannah proof coins, coins minted at West Point, one of his favorite type to collect. He pulled out a magnifying glass to show her flaws, and when Savannah held the magnifying glass, I could see the animation on my father's face. Despite my feelings about coins, I couldn't help smiling, simply to see my father so happy. But he was still my dad, and there was no miracle. Once he'd shown her the coins and told her everything about them and how they'd been collected, his comments grew further and further apart. He began to repeat himself and realized it, causing him to retreat and grow even quieter. In time, Savannah must have sensed his growing discomfort, for she gestured to the coins atop the desk. "Thank you, Mr. Tyree. I feel like I've really learned something." My dad smiled, obviously drained, and I took it as my cue to stand.
"Yeah, that was great, but we should probably be going," I said.
"Oh, okay. It was wonderful meeting you."
When my dad nodded again, Savannah leaned in and gave him a hug.
"Let's do this again sometime," she whispered.
And though my dad hugged her back, it reminded me of the lifeless hugs I'd received as a child. I wondered if she felt as awkward as he obviously did. In the car, Savannah seemed lost in thought. I would have asked her about her impressions of my father, but wasn't sure I wanted to hear the answer. I know my dad and I didn't have the best relationship, but she was right when she'd said he was the only family I had and had raised me. I could complain about him, but the last thing I wanted to hear was someone else doing it too. Still, I didn't think she would say anything negative, simply because it wasn't in her nature, and when she turned to me, she was smiling.
"Thanks for bringing me by to meet him," she said. "He's got such a warm heart."
I'd never heard anyone describe him that way, but I liked it.
"I'm glad you liked him."
"I did," she said, sounding sincere. "He's gentle."
She glanced at me.
"But I think I understand why you got in so much trouble when you were younger. He didn't strike me as the kind of father who would lay down the law.
He didn't, I agreed. She shot me a playful scowl.
And mean old you took advantage.
I laughed. Yeah, I suppose I did.
She shook her head. You should have known better.
I was just a kid.
Ah, the old youth excuse. You know that doesn't hold water, don't you? I never took advantage of my parents.
Yes, the perfect child, I think you mentioned that.
Are you making fun of me?
No, of course not.
She continued to stare at me.
I think you are,
she finally decided.
Okay, maybe a little.
She thought about my answer.
Well, maybe I deserve that. But just so you know, I wasn't perfect.
No.
Of course not. I remember quite plainly, for instance, that in fourth grade I got a B on a test.
I feigned shock. No, don't tell me that.
It's true.
How did you ever recover?
How do you think? She shrugged. I told myself it would never happen again.
I didn't doubt it. Are you hungry yet?
I thought you'd never ask.
What are you in the mood for?
She drew her hair up in a sloppy ponytail, then let it go.
How about a big, juicy cheeseburger?
As soon as she said it, I found myself wondering if Savannah was too good to be true.
7.
I must admit that you bring me to eat at the most interesting places,
Savannah said, glancing over her shoulder. In the distance beyond the dune, we could see a long line of customers snaking away from Joe's burger stand in the middle of a gravel parking lot.
It's the best in town, I said, taking a bite of my enormous burger.
Savannah sat close to me in the sand, facing the water.
The burgers were fantastic, nice and thick, and though the French fries were a bit too greasy, they hit the spot. As she ate, Savannah stared at the sea, and in the waning light, I found myself thinking that she seemed even more at home here than I did. I thought again about the way she talked to my father, about the way she talked to everyone, for that matter, including me. She had that rare ability to be exactly what people needed when she was with them, and yet still remain true to herself. I couldn't think of anyone who remotely resembled her in appearance or personality, and I wondered again why she'd taken a liking to me. We were as different as two people could be. She was a mountain girl, gifted and sweet, raised by attentive parents with the desire to help those in need. I was a tattooed army grunt, hard around the edges and largely a stranger in my own home. Remembering how she'd been with my dad, I could tell how gracefully her parents had raised her. And as she sat beside me, I found myself wishing that I could be more like her.
What are you thinking?
Her voice, probing yet gentle, pulled me away from my thoughts.
I was wondering why you're here, I confessed.
Because I like the beach. I don't get to do this very often. It's not like there are any waves or shrimp boats where I'm from.
When she saw my expression, she tapped my hand.
That was flippant, she said. I'm sorry. I'm here because I want to be here.
I set aside the remains of my burger, wondering why I cared so much. It was a new feeling for me, one I wasn't sure I'd ever get used to. She patted my arm and turned toward the water again.
It's gorgeous out here. All we need is a sunset over the water, and it would be perfect.
We'd have to go to the other side of the country, I said.
Really, you're trying to tell me the sun sets in the west?
I noted the mischievous gleam in her eye. That's what I hear, anyway.
She'd eaten only half of her cheeseburger, and she slipped it into the bag, then added the remains of mine as well. After folding the bag over so the wind wouldn't blow it away, she stretched out her legs and turned to me, looking at once flirtatious and innocent.
You want to know what I was thinking?
She asked. I waited, drinking in the sight of her.
I was thinking that I wished you'd been with me the last couple of days. I mean, I enjoyed getting to know everyone better. We ate lunch together, and the dinner last night was a lot of fun. But it just felt like something was wrong, like I was missing something. It wasn't until I saw you walking up the beach that I realized it was you.
I swallowed. In another life, in another time, I would have kissed her then. But even though I wanted to, I didn't. Instead, all I could do was stare at her. She met my gaze without a hint of self-consciousness.
When you asked me why I was here, I made a joke because I thought the answer was obvious. Spending time with you just feels right somehow. Easy, like the way it's supposed to be. Like it is with my parents. They're just comfortable together. And I remember growing up thinking that one day I wanted to have that too.
She paused.
I'd like you to meet them one day.
My throat had gone dry.
I'd like that too.
She slipped her hand easily into mine, her fingers intertwining with my own. We sat in peaceful silence. At the water's edge, terns were bobbing their beaks into the sand in search of food. A cluster of seagulls broke as a wave rolled in. The sky had grown darker and the clouds more ominous. Up the beach, I could see scattered couples walking under a spreading indigo sky. As we sat together, the air filled with the crashing of the surf. I marveled at how new everything felt, new and yet comfortable, as if we'd known each other forever. Yet we weren't even a real couple.
Nor, a voice in my head reminded me, is it likely you ever will be?
In a little more than a week, I'd be heading back to Germany, and this would all be over. I'd spent enough time with my buddies to know that it takes more than a few special days to survive a relationship that spanned the Atlantic Ocean. I'd heard guys in my unit swear they were in love after coming off leave, and maybe they were, but it never lasted. Spending time with Savannah made me wonder whether it was possible to defy the norm. I wanted more of her, and no matter what happened between us, I already knew I'd never forget.